Chapter 16. His name was Tyrion Veltras, and to some he was a legend. To some he embodied the pride of Israel. He was a hero in that sense, the scion to the Veltras family, a military expert who commanded one of the most powerful private armies on the continent. He had defended Israel from every threat that had encroached upon its soil for decades, and protected humans, his subjects, first and foremost. There were those who admired him, admired, but did not love. Tyrion was a hard man to love for all his accomplishments. Others thought of him as the embodiment of all the negative qualities of a lord. They called him the closest thing to a tyrant that Israel had ever seen, a warhawk who was a match for the worst of the drakes in his unwavering pro-humanity stance, a man who looked down on diplomacy as a weaker alternative to war, who viewed other nations and continents as adversaries in a global competition for which there could be only one winner. And yet, those who hated him had to admit that he had his own sense of honor. The man was tyrannical, harsh, unrelenting, and merciless, yes, but he did not employ assassins like the leading lady of Israel, Magnolia Reinhardt. He kept his word. If he was your enemy, he came at you on the battlefield with lance in hand. It was a small comfort to those who had died on the tip of his spear or sword, but it meant that no one watched their backs around Tyrion Veltras. They were too busy watching their fronts. All of this was meaningless to the man himself, of course. Tyrion Veltras had an opinion about himself, and as far as he was concerned, it trumped whatever anyone might whisper about him. He did not waste time with idle self-doubt. He thought of himself as a soldier, a leader, a strategist in general and administrator, a lord, in short. He rarely thought of himself as a father. But as Tyrion Veltras sat in his war camp, listening to the rain patter down on the roof of his tent, he spared a thought for his sons. They were young, of course. Samael was 8, and Hethen was 12? No, he would be 13 now. His birthday had been 2 weeks ago.
I sent him a dagger. Oh, or was it something else? Ulim took care of it. We spoke on the matter.
The man restlessly shook his head and stood. His majordomo would handle the matter. His sons were well protected and were being raised properly as they could be at any rate. He didn't need to think of them when there were more pressing matters. But Tyrion's thoughts did stray back to his sons just once more. It wasn't guilt that invaded his heart, but something more akin to resignation, a cold fact. He would not see his sons for at least another month or two. Possibly many more. This campaign would take a while. But that was necessary. So Tyrion strode out of his tent, grimacing as warm rain instantly buffeted his clothes. Of course his rings protected him from the rain, as they would arrows, but Tyrion disliked rain. It was too nostalgic.
Lord Veltras!
The soldiers standing guard around his tent immediately straightened as the lord came out. He nodded to them, and then paused when he saw the other man standing in the rain. He had patiently been awaiting Tyrion. That was clear from the rain that had soaked his bright, silvery steel chainmail shirt and clothes beneath. But Yatan Byers was not the sort of man to wait with parasol in hand or have someone else hold one for him. That he had no rings like Lord Tyrion was simply a matter of finances.
Lord Yatan, Lord Veltras.
Yatan Byers, head of the Byers family, lowered his head slightly as his gray-brown hair and careful beard dripped with water. Tyrion, who was clean-shaven, eyed the man and nodded in return. He gestured, and the two men began striding through the camp.
You should have entered my tent. Waiting in the rain hardly befits a lord of the realm. I prefer to wait outside. I'm sure you were occupied in preparing for our strategy meeting. Considerate of you.
Lord Tyrion's reply was cold and clipped, although that didn't reflect his feelings towards Yatan Byers. The two men headed for a larger pavilion across the busy camp. They strode past soldiers who saluted, knights who turned and bowed, hurrying servants and porters, cooks and handlers, hearing the hustle and bustle of a massive army moving around them in the rain. This was the largest force Israel had seen gathered all year. Tens of thousands of armed retainers and forces from human cities had come at Lord Tyrion's command, and more arrived each day by the hundreds or sometimes thousands. It was a massive host, sustained only by the equally large volume of supplies they'd brought with them, and they had been camped in this place for over half a month now. Over 36 lords and ladies and other leading figures of Israel had also come. It was they who Tyrion was headed towards now. As the two men walked, Tyrion considered that it was fortunate that Yitan was part of the strategy meeting they were headed towards. Of course, Yitan Byers was a lord, but he was a lesser one. The Byers family was small, and the man had brought over 1,000 retainers, but it was almost all his house could spare. He was hardly as influential as Lord Tyrion, whose personal army had more than 20,000 horse in his vanguard. He would not have been readily welcome in the smaller gathering that Lord Tyrion was headed towards, normally. However, Yitan Byers' fortunes had changed in the last few days. Markedly so. It was nothing the man had done himself, but the incredible images from Lyskor had caused his influence to rise sharply. That two of his offspring had helped vanquish the face-eater moths that had besieged the city had made his political value soar, to the point where he was included in the discussions as a matter of course. The Byers family had also been approached by several buyers looking to order their signature silver and steel arms, according to the reports Tyrion had glanced at. That was all welcome to Lord Tyrion. Yitan Byers was known to him, and if they weren't friends or even that close, Tyrion respected the man. He was a good lord, solid, unpretentious. He sensed Yitan Byers looking at him before the older man spoke.
"We've been camped for nearly 3 weeks now. Are we to move out within the week, or should I order my men to prepare for a longer wait while the Goblin Lord keeps raising settlements?"
He was also brave. Yitan had said what other more powerful nobles would have hesitated to mention. Tyrion nodded to himself. 3 weeks they'd been camped here, waiting. Any sane strategist would question why. After the Goblin Lord had defeated Zell Shivertail and the army formed by Magnolia Reinhardt in battle, they had expected Tyrion to march on the wounded goblins at once. He was known as a decisive attacker, one who didn't hesitate, but Tyrion had his reasons.
"I intend to keep your men waiting a while longer, Yitan."
The other lord eyed Tyrion sideways as they walked across the muddy ground.
"How long?" "Possibly less than a week. I intend to move some of my forces ahead of the rest. I'll take some of the horse and a few mages, but the main army waits." "Why? To keep levying more forces? Is the Goblin Lord that dangerous?"
Tyrion paused.
"He slew the Tidebreaker in combat. Isn't that enough for caution?" "For caution, yes, but this seems excessive."
It did, but Zell Shivertail's death had given Tyrion a useful excuse. No one had expected Zell to fall in battle. Tyrion hadn't. For all he'd hoped, Zell Shivertail would lose the battle and be forced to defend Inversil instead. His death was an unexpected boon.
"I have my reasons, Yitan. As you'll hear shortly, I'm aware the nobility is chafing at the delay, but I will lead the army in the best way I deem fit." "Which doesn't include informing those under your command of your thoughts?" "At the moment, there are too many factors I must consider."
Yitan's eyebrows rose.
"Such as rain."
Lord Tyrion looked up. The rain didn't fall into his eyes. It flowed away from an invisible barrier a few centimeters away from his skin. Yitan looked up, shading his eyes.
"Rain. Hardly ideal for marching, but you'd have this army wait for weather." "I await a single precise moment, Yitan. Give it time. The Goblin Lord is doing damage, but he's on the move. Marching towards that so-called Great Chieftain in the mountain. I can't believe he was living under our noses this entire time. If they combine forces..." "Silver and steel. Veltros, tell me you're not going to let that happen." "We'll move out, Yitan. Trust me." "I do, but you have to understand that I have questions."
It was a dramatic statement coming from a Byers. They were normally staunch supporters of the Reinhardts, who had strong ties to their family, but Yutan had placed his trust in the better commander. Tyrion intended to honor that trust.
I'm afraid your questions will have to wait. This strategy meeting will be resolved shortly, to no one's satisfaction, I suspect. But I do have one piece of information that might make us move out faster.
Oh?
Apparently there's a new province just southwest of Yndrisil.
A new lord?
An emperor.
What?
The reports are confirmed. An emperor has appeared, and he has a rather unusual holding.
Yutan had to shake his head as he avoided a large puddle of water.
Emperors and goblin lords. What's next?
Tyrion smiled. The report he'd received had been intriguing, possibly helpful. So, Magnolia thought she could use him as an ally?
More to consider, Yutan,
but not act on. The goblin lord is growing in strength. His forces were down to 60,000 by most estimates. He'll replenish his numbers heading north, and if he takes the mountain...
Patience, Lord Yutan.
An odd word to hear from you.
Perhaps.
Lord Tyrion paused in front of the pavilion. He looked up again. The rain was still falling. It fell over his camp, where countless humans awaited his order. But he held his ground. He waited, as the continent of Israel and the world waited and wondered why. Soon the rains would stop, and then, or perhaps before then, Tyrion would make his move. He just had to wait for the right moment. At least Lyskor was hot on everyone's lips, distracting them from pressing him too hard. The events in the city had truly been newsworthy. Lord Tyrion was keeping a careful eye on the developments there, but he could have no idea what was going on in the dungeon that very moment. They fell through the water, down into the rift, into the dungeon. Their descent was not unnoticed. The dungeon waited for them. As the Red Fang warriors neared the bubble of air that marked the point at which the dungeon began, they swam towards the edges of the rift, dropping the stones they held, moving quickly before they ran out of air. The blackness of oxygen deprivation swam around their thoughts. They gasped as their heads broke out of the water and gravity asserted itself. The Red Fang goblins clung to the sides of the rift as the stones they dropped floated downwards through the water. They fell into the dungeon, bringing a small splattering of water from overhead. The goblins grunted as they watched the stones fall and began to climb down. Into a trap. At the bottom of the rift, hidden further back, with bows trained on the opening leading upwards, were monsters. People. Raskgar. The huge furred beasts were larger than gnolls, stronger, and their hunched forms and long claws and teeth made them look like a cross between an upright bear and lion. But for all their brute strength and muscle, they were intelligent. They held crude bows, and they were armed with arrows coated with poison. The Raskgar were not mindless monsters. They had noticed this entry point to the dungeon and began ambushing adventurers they came down. The weak ones, at any rate. The gold-ranked teams the Silent Hunters left alone. But 8 out of 10 teams had fallen to the ancient gnoll kin before leaving the entrance point to the dungeon here. Now the Raskgar waited, listening as the stones dropped and cracked on the stone floor. The adventurers were coming. The not-gnolls waited as the telltale droplets of water cascaded down from above. The Raskgar kept their poisoned arrows aimed at the stone walls, waiting. They could pick off the climbing adventurers like flies. They just needed to see all of them. They waited and waited and... After 2 minutes, the furred hunters began to grow restless. They didn't do anything as foolish as make any sound, but they did look at each other and silently urge each other forwards a few steps. Had the adventurers not come down after all? Had they decided to return above? The sentries had spotted something swimming down through the water above, but why were they taking so long? 8 of the Raskgar were shifting positions, and 2 had come closer for a furtive look. The lead not-gnoll edged forwards and peered up at the rift. He moved a few feet forwards. An arrow sprouted from his eye. He dropped without a sound. The other Raskgar stared at him in alarm and then stared at the rift. They saw something move right where ceiling met dungeon. A head dropped down. Something flashed. Another Raskgar dropped with an arrow in his chest. He had time to choke and try to roar before he fell. The remaining six immediately scattered. They aimed back at the rift, but the archer had disappeared. They waited, and then the body appeared again, from another spot. The archer aimed, spotted a Raskgar, and loosed. The Not-Null howled in pain as an arrow took him in the side. The other Raskgar loosed arrows at the spot where the archer had been. Too late. The face disappeared out of view again. The howling Raskgar fell silent as one of his companions struck him with a clawed hand, silencing him. The five hunters aimed their bows carefully, waiting. Waiting. Then they saw a flicker of movement. A head peered down out of the hole. Crimson eyes blinked at the surprised Not-Nulls. Instantly, all five Raskgar loosed arrows. The head pulled up. The arrows broke against the wall, and then another torso dropped down. The hobgoblin holding the bow loosed an arrow as the Raskgar realized too late that they'd been baited to shoot. An arrow took one of the Raskgar in the side of the head as she turned to duck. Another struck the wounded Raskgar in the leg. Now there were four of the ambushers left. They saw the hobgoblin disappear again and looked at each other. What was happening? In the rift, hanging from the walls of the cliff leading up, the Red Fang warriors were completely silent. They gestured at each other, communicating the spots of the remaining four archers to their lone sniper. Bad arrow. The hob hung upside down as Short Hilt and Head Scratcher strained to hold his legs steady. He growled a soft order, and they lowered him. He shot, cursed, and kicked both legs. They instantly hauled him upwards as more arrows missed his position. Six shots. Four kills. The seventh elicited a brief howl and then silence. Bad Arrow raised a finger as Numbtongue poked his head down below and answered with a hand sign. The wounded Raskgar was dead. Three arrows had finally done it in. Three left. The hobgoblins didn't hesitate. They dropped off the cliff walls, landing hard as the hunters began to retreat. The Raskgar hadn't expected that, either. Short Hilt and Numbtongue charged one of the Not-Nulls, while Rabbit Eater and Head Scratcher rushed another. Bad Arrow's eighth arrow cut down the third Raskgar. It was over in a second. The two archers fell to Short Hilt's sword and the dagger Head Scratcher had borrowed from Bad Arrow. They were strong and quick, but faced with two hobs each, they went down fast, victims of multiple cuts. In the silence, the Red Fang warriors looked around swiftly. There were no more monsters. The ambush team had well and truly been ambushed. It had been an easy victory. Perhaps too easy, but the Raskgar had grown accustomed to easy pickings. Silver and bronze rank adventurers were easy targets. After all, who expected to be ambushed the first second they entered a dungeon? Goblins would. Goblins always expected a trap. Bad Arrow sneered and kicked a twitching claw away as he inspected the arrows the Gnoll throwbacks carried. He grunted as he found 14 he liked and tossed the bad ones at Rabbit Eater along with one of the bows. The other hob grunted and slung it over his shoulder. The Red Fang warriors spread out, searching the bodies, still not making a sound. They came away with crude stone axes, one genuine steel war axe, probably looted from an adventurer, and several iron and steel daggers. No swords, though. It seemed the Raskgar preferred axes. The hobs grabbed the bows and arrows and nodded to each other. Well, now they had weapons. This was the dungeon. It was dark. Quiet, but not silent. The Red Fang warriors walked single file down a corridor, more like a tunnel. They could see well in the dark, but the blackness was oppressive. They could hear distant sounds echoing down the corridor. The dungeon was filled with life. But the things that moved in the dungeon didn't move about loudly, not unless they were the biggest and most dangerous thing, and that was a relative term. The monsters were all predators, and they stalked each other until they met in a brief, loud flash of violence. Sometimes the goblins thought they heard a trap go off. The sounds were so faint they were practically inaudible over their heartbeats, but the goblins kept their breathing silent, their footsteps invisible as they pressed forwards. This was home. They were used to this. Not this dungeon, but this. Danger. Death. The Raskgar hadn't known what hit them. They were used to adventurers, not goblins who'd lived in the high passes. This is how they moved. Silently. The five walked relatively spaced out down a corridor, following each other's tracks exactly. Rabbit Eater took point. As the only goblin with danger sense, he was suited to check for traps. But he was aware of his limitations and opted for a different method than Halrock's precise techniques or Seaborn's expertise at spotting tripwires and pressure plates and concealed magic runes. Rabbit Eater followed the tracks on the ground, the places where dust and debris had been stirred by passing, because monsters had obviously learned to avoid the traps. So Rabbit Eater followed those spots. That meant, of course, they would run into monsters, but that beat stepping on something nasty. These are the things they carried. Healing potions and alchemical weapons stolen from Octavia's shop. Weapons from the Raskgar. A hemp bag, three of them, in fact. A bedsheet stuffed into Head Scratcher's pack. Sharp rocks, a handmade sling of Rabbit Eater's. Nothing else. No food. No artifacts. To adventurers, they would have been horribly unprepared. But the Red Fang Goblins followed the goblin way of doing things. Travel light to hide and run. They weren't here to explore. They were on a mission. Find the treasure. They'd memorized Vuleel Dre's explanation of where to go. The Red Fang Goblins had to cross about 18 corridors between the entrance and the dungeon. They made it down two corridors, one filled with flame traps, another completely cleared, according to Vuleel Dre. It wasn't. The Red Fang Goblins paused as they spotted something oozing its way down the corridor at a distance. Bad Arrow raised his bow, training his arrow on the slug coming their way. Then the goblins realized it was a lot of slugs and backed up. They were headed down an intersection, dozens upon dozens of the long, oozing things. They were giant slugs with razor spines on their fronts. They were following something. The Red Fang Goblins peered at the wounded, shambling, giant thing that was stumbling away from them. Moth? A face-eater moth, one of the big wagon-sized ones. It looked like it had been chewed apart. It was bleeding as it fled. The slugs pursued. The Red Fang Goblins exchanged a look. How many moths had survived the battle at Lascaux? Had they lost their position in the dungeon? Were things hunting them? No time for questions. They moved on. This tunnel was odd. It was devoid of traps, according to the scattered tracks, but it looked as if it was because it was part of some kind of crossing. The corridor split eight ways, two of the paths sloping downwards. The Red Fang Goblins paused. Vuleel Dre had gone left here. They crossed to one edge of the corridor. Rabbit Eater peeked around the corner of the intersection swiftly. His first glance showed him nothing, so he moved forwards. The other Hobbs kept an eye on the other directions. They moved swiftly, each one tracking a different direction. This was like a hunting expedition in the high passes. They watched their surroundings, checking for camouflaged monsters. In the high passes, it was common to run into gargoyles hiding in plain sight, and that was only the outer layers. Further in, there were things that could kill two goblins in the middle of a patrol without anyone noticing. This corridor led to a labyrinth of doors, a maze of interconnected rooms. The Red Fang warriors slowed here and made even less noise than before. They crept along, silent, wary. They had to pass through this section. Vuleel Dre had fled through here, pursued by moths and Raskgar. There were no moths today, but there were many, many doors. The Red Fang goblins paused at the first one. They stood back from it, in the center of the corridor, their eyes narrowed. Each goblin was different. Aaron had said so, and she was close to the truth. They were all low level compared to adventurers, at least. None of them had passed level 20 for all they were elites. Goblins seldom lived long enough to level that high, so Garen Redfang had created goblin warriors who trained hard and relied on their skills as much as their skills. Head Scratcher was passionate, angry, prone to fury in combat, strongest of the five. Bad Arrow was an archer, Rabbit Eater was a tracker, swift. Numbtongue could speak, and Short Hilt, he was a weapon expert. His sword had been the only one not to break from use against the face-eater moths. He had a skill, keener edge, which allowed his iron blade to cut flawlessly for the first few blows. It was he who made the first move. The door was old, wooden. It looked like someone had broken it and then rebuilt it with scraps. The goblins eyed it. Shorthilt moved slowly towards it, his blade held in one hand. He paused, 5 steps from the door. He eyed it, and then darted forwards. He stabbed through the old wood at knee height and was rewarded with a scream. The goblins instantly charged forwards. They hadn't known something was behind the door. They'd guessed. The other doors flew open as Raskgar charged out. The furious beast people looked around for their prey and saw them running down the corridor. They were escaping. Rabbit Eater took the lead, dashing from safe spot to safe spot. The other 4 hobs raised their bows and loosed arrows, making the Raskgar duck back under cover, snarling. 1, 2, 10? There must have been over 20 of them waiting in ambush. They howled as they followed the Red Fang goblins, but the goblins' arrows forced them to stay back, and the goblins knew where to go. Forwards, down the corridor, then left through a low tunnel. Up a ramp, skirt the suspiciously clean section of flooring there. Now, through the right corridor. The howling of the Raskgar followed them. The goblins ran as fast as Rabbit Eater could move. They saw a figure appear out of the corridor behind them. Bat Arrow snarled, shot. The figure dropped. He was no ordinary archer. He was an expert. A marksman. Bat Arrow's fingers plucked another arrow, and he loosed it as more Raskgar poured around the wall. Scattershot. His arrow struck one of the Raskgar. It should have fragmented into deadly shrapnel, but the Knot Knoll was armed with a wicker shield. Bat Arrow snarled as the Raskgar roared at him. More arrows flew, this time back at the hobs. The Knot Knolls charged down the tunnel. Shorthilt, Numbtongue, and Henscratcher went to meet them as Rabbit Eater moved backwards, scouting the path forwards. Raskgar. They were huge, taller than the hobs, but hunched. They outweighed the goblins. They wouldn't have outmassed Grunter, but all 5 of the Red Fang warriors were thinner. The first charge nearly knocked Headscratcher off his feet as Shorthilt cut his enemy. Numbtongue hacked at a Raskgar and was unpleasantly surprised as his axe barely cut through the fur and flesh. The muscles of the monster were thick. And it had claws and a stone mace. It struck Numbtongue on the shoulder, and he shouted in fury. His axe struck the Raskgar across the face, and it threw him backwards. The monster charged, and Numbtongue swiveled. Rather than stand up, he waited for the Raskgar warrior to leap at him and kicked. It was a strong blow. The monster's leap was diverted, and it smashed into a wall. Quick as a flash, Numbtongue was on him. He swung with all his might. His iron axe bit into the Raskgar's shoulder and struck. It snarled and slashed at him with its claws. Numbtongue felt it lay open his arm and let go of his axe. He punched back, snapping the thing's head back with powerful blows. But it was too much beast. The hob felt the Raskgar's claws open up his chest, sighed. He stumbled back and the Raskgar chased him, right into Shorthilt's sword. The other hob had dispatched his foe with a precise cut to the belly and face, hitting the vitals. He stepped back as Numbtongue garbled a word of thanks. They spun. Headscratcher rose from his foe. His steel war axe was buried in its chest, having splintered the monster's shield first. Strong foes. The hobs exchanged a glance as more Raskgar warriors and archers poured up the ramp. They turned. Rabbit Eater shouted. The hobs ran after him, following his trail. How many tunnels had they gone down? Bat Arrow snapped a question as he grabbed Headscratcher's quiver of arrows. Rabbit Eater counted. 6? 12 more to go. They had to lose their pursuers. The howling of the Raskgar was drawing attention their way. Time for a diversion. Numbtongue asked a quick question as he splashed part of a healing potion over his injuries. Rabbit Eater pointed. Numbtongue grabbed a bag from his belt and opened it. He tossed it to the ground as smoke began to billow forth. A smoke bag. One of Ryoka's specialty items, in fact. Only 2 gold coins and 3 silver at Octavia's shop. free if you grabbed it when she wasn't looking. The Raskgar coughed as the smoke obscured the goblin's progress. One snarled and charged through the smoke and howled in agony. The other Raskgar paused and backed up. The smoke lasted for 2 minutes. 2 minutes. It began to clear. They spotted their fallen comrade. He'd ventured onto the trap in the corridor. A pressure plate that had swung part of the wall out and sent a series of needle-sharp spikes into his body. The Raskgar growled and sniffed the air. They coughed. The smoke was getting in the way. But they had their prey scent. They followed, cautiously moving down the safe parts of the corridor they knew. The Red Fang Goblins had used their time to flee further. Rabbit Eater was working off of Uliel Dre's directions still, but he had to check for traps. He was sweating with the effort of his work. Speed or safety? He hesitated and then ran down a section of the corridor he thought was safe. He didn't die. The other hobs followed him. Rabbit Eater was an expert at fast running. He'd caught rabbits, hence his name. He was as close to a scout as the Red Fang warriors had. He would have been one, but he was a better warrior, and so Garen had promoted him. Now he ran forwards with reckless abandon. There was a trick to traps, if you were fast enough. A glow underfoot. Rabbit Eater dove, and the snaking whip of light went right through his side rather than his chest. He cried out as the other hobs paused. They checked the right-hand side of the corridor and rushed over to him. The lance of light had gone right through Rabbit Eater's side. It hadn't cauterized the wound, strangely. It was just light, not heat. Rabbit Eater was already bleeding. He let Shorthilt pour a healing potion into the wound and got up. Head Scratcher grabbed his shoulder. Rabbit Eater nodded. Not dead. So long as they weren't dead, the hobs could trust to the healing potions to mend their wounds. They'd get tired and lose blood, but they could go on. They'd stolen 2 potions per hob, an extravagant amount for the Red Fang warriors, who'd grown used to having 1 or 2 healing potions between a group of 13. On. The Raskgar had to be following. Numbtongue had heard a distant howl. The hobs moved on as Rabbit Eater slowed his rapid advance only marginally. They were so preoccupied with advancing that they nearly didn't hear the heavy tread of echoing footsteps until it was too late. The hobs froze. Something was coming. This tunnel had a few alcoves to hide in, so the goblins did just that. They hid as something came towards them. Whatever it was metallic. Head Scratcher saw a huge suit of enchanted armor come walking towards him. It paused as it saw him and raised an old sword. Numbtongue leapt on it from behind, and Rabbit Eater tackled its legs. The suit of armor was strong. It threw Numbtongue, but was too slow to stop Shorthilt. He grabbed its right arm. The enchanted armor raised its left, and Bad Arrow grabbed that. It struggled. Both hobs grunted as they used their strength to hold it still. Rabbit Eater was holding the legs together, and Numbtongue raced to help him. They held the armor still as Head Scratcher raised his axe. The first blow made the armor's pauldrons ring with the impact. Head Scratcher snarled and struck it again with the axe. The blow was heavy with all his force behind it, but the armor barely buckled. The armor was magical, but the hobs held on, and Head Scratcher hit it again and again and again. He had lost too many friends. Head Scratcher had always been strong, but the grief of losing Bug Ear, the fury of battle, it had all made him stronger. As a hob, he was twice, perhaps 3 times as strong as he had been as a goblin. The fifth blow bent the armor, and Bad Arrow swore as the impact made his arms go numb. Head Scratcher saw the suit of armor struggling to be free. The visored head swiveled back and forth from Bad Arrow to Shorthilt, outraged, as if demanding to be given a fair fight. The goblins didn't believe in fair fights. Head Scratcher raised his axe again. The sixth blow finally split the armor's right shoulder. Whatever binding was on the pauldrons came loose, and Shorthilt ripped the arm off with a roar. The armor stumbled. Head Scratcher abandoned his axe and grabbed the armor's leg with Rabbit Eater as Shorthilt tossed aside his arm and grabbed the head. All 5 hobs nodded, and they all pulled simultaneously. The magic resisted the Hobbs for a few seconds, and then the weakened enchantment gave. The Hobbs tumbled backwards as the suit of armor came apart in a rending screech of old metal. They stumbled upright and grabbed the armor. Now they had armor. They discarded most of it. The heavy chest piece would slow them down. The suit of armor had been built for a true giant among men, or some other species. But the gauntlets, the greaves, and other small pieces? Loot that could be reused or resized, perhaps. The goblins each took a piece. Numbtongue tried the helmet on and grunted. Too big. He took it anyways. A helmet could save your life when arrows were flying at your head. The battle had taken minutes. Long. Far too long. The Hobbs had expected the Rask Guard to appear behind them at any second, but as their heartbeats slowed and the pounding of blood stopped rushing through their ears, they realized something was off. They couldn't hear the howls of pursuit. Had they escaped their pursuers? They'd run through at least one intersection, but no. Hunters didn't give up that easily, and this was the Raskgar's territory, so why could they hear nothing? The Hobbs listened. Rabbit Eater frowned. He had the best ears, and he could hear nothing. Not one sound. Had something scared the Raskgar off? Or had they found other prey? Were they sneaking up on the goblins? The Red Fang warriors exchanged a glance. Bat Arrow drew a finger slowly down his arm and pointed. Rabbit Eater nodded. He took point while Bat Arrow and Numbtongue both watched their backs. This time the Red Fang warriors moved slowly, listening hard. They knew this game. The Raskgar could be circling around, moving ahead and setting up an ambush. They advanced slowly until the tunnel widened and they entered a bathhouse? The goblins paused as they entered a larger room. In the center was a long, deep pool filled with water. It would have looked like a swimming pool if the goblins had ever seen a swimming pool before. They could only compare it to a bathhouse, which was in itself a rather abstract concept to them. It was strange. The Red Fang warriors had listened to Garen Red Fang's exploits time and time again, and they were familiar with dungeons. Dungeons came in many forms. Some could be ruined castles, old mansions, or cities lost to time. In such places, you'd naturally find homes and other rooms once intended for leisure. But this dungeon was clearly a killing field meant to channel adventurers towards monsters and traps. Why was there such a room here? Perhaps it was meant for the monsters? They had to drink and eat. The Red Fang goblins edged into the room. Vuleel Dre had described passing through here, but like the Red Fang goblins, they'd refused to go anywhere near the water. It looked innocuous enough, but what might be living in the pool? Something stirred near the far edge. The goblins froze. They saw something hop backwards and then scuttle out of the room. The Red Fang warriors exchanged a glance and moved on. How many corridors left? 10? 8? They were over halfway there, and they hadn't run into anything after the suit of armor. The sounds of pursuit were gone. That worried them, actually. Numbtongue kept glancing over his shoulder. Of the five Hobbs, he was probably the weakest, as his duel with the Raskgar had shown. That still meant he was a strong warrior, but if he had a role in the group, it was being smart. Just being smart. The fact that Numbtongue could read and speak the common tongue quite fluently made him unique, even among other Hobbs. He was better at reading and speaking than Garen Redfang, in fact, and it was rumored that he'd learned how to write in both the human and drakish scripts. He was smart, but he was a warrior, which was more important in the Redfang tribe. It was Numbtongue who'd memorized every line Vuleel Dre had spoken and pointed left down the next intersection. He was good at remembering. He could remember every word from Aaron's song, the plays he'd listened to. It wasn't that he had a perfect memory, it was just that he cared about important things. And Numbtongue also thought ahead. He wondered how they'd retrieve the treasure. Apparently it was trapped. Would they have to do the goblin thing in retrieving it? Another corridor. A long one. It felt like actual rooms were few and far between. This was a labyrinth, whereas the area that the Half-Seekers and Griffin Hunt had so patiently attempted to disarm were room after room of challenges. The Red Fang Goblins crept onwards. Shorthilt covered the back as Bat Arrow glanced down a side passage. The goblin paused as he saw something behind him. A face. A head. It was low to the ground, peeking around the corner of the hallway they'd just passed through. It was too low to the ground, as if whomever was there were lying on the ground and peeking around the corner. But Shorthilt's blood chilled. The distant face didn't look right. It was a human face, eyes wide and staring. A man's? Shorthilt thought so. Instantly he spoke a word. Three Red Fang warriors whirled while Rabbit Eater kept an eye ahead. They stared at the spot Shorthilt was pointing towards. But the head was gone. The goblins glanced at Shorthilt. He pointed and spoke a word.
Head.
It was the first word anyone had said since entering the dungeon. The Red Fang warriors exchanged looks. Shorthilt had said head, not person. That was because Shorthilt wasn't sure about what he'd seen. Headscratcher pointed and jerked his thumb. Head back and see? The other three considered it and shook their heads. Bat Arrow raised a finger and circled with it. Too risky of being snuck up on. He pointed. Rabbit Eater nodded. They moved on. But this time Shorthilt and Numbtongue kept an eye on their rear. They passed down another corridor, lingering to check to make sure nothing was headed towards them. Then they strode into another room. This one had writing on the walls. Numbtongue paused to stare at it. It looked like a story? Some kind of warning? He was familiar with Drake writing and human writing, and this was neither. It looked vaguely similar to Drake writing, but there weren't any distinguishable words. He shook his head as the others moved through the room. They were on track. Fulil Dre hadn't mentioned the words on the wall, though. Numbtongue turned and then cursed. There was a head staring at them. It disappeared as the Red Fang warriors turned again. It had been fast. Numbtongue had barely seen it, but it had been a head, all right.
Head.
Shorthilt looked questioningly at Numbtongue. The hob nodded.
Raskar.
Shorthilt stopped. Numbtongue looked at him, sensing the goblin's sudden change in wariness. He raised his shoulders. What? Shorthilt hesitated and pointed back down the corridor.
Human.
The other goblins stared at him. Shorthilt had seen a human head, not a Raskar staring blankly at him. Numbtongue's skin crawled. He looked at the others. Headscratcher pointed. He shrugged his shoulders and pointed at the two. He wanted them to explain.
Head low. Here.
Numbtongue bent down and showed the others what he'd seen. A staring head, low to the ground. Too low. Peeking around as if something was watching them. A Raskar? But it had looked so... The other Red Fang warriors looked at Numbtongue's pantomime as Shorthilt nodded. They looked at each other uneasily. That didn't look right. Headscratcher pointed. He walked two fingers back slowly and pointed at Bat Arrow. The hob nodded. Slowly the hobs left the room. Bat Arrow took a position at the doorway, watching the entrance. He waited as the other hobs proceeded down the corridor and then backed up. Not once did he turn around. Back down the next corridor, Numbtongue urging him backwards with low words. Bat Arrow did not want to get too far from the group. He kept staring. Now they were far from the room they'd left. He didn't blink. And as he heard the other hobs taking a few more wary steps, he saw it. A head poking around the doorway. This one was a human head. Male. Balding. Was it the one Shorthilt had seen? It peeked out, not turning, but Bat Arrow swore and loosed an arrow. The head vanished before the arrow was halfway towards it. This time the Red Fang warriors froze. They heard the arrow crack against a distant wall and then silence. They were ready for something, anything, but the head didn't reappear. Bat Arrow muttered. He looked at Numbtongue and gestured. The other Hobbs waited for Numbtongue to make sense of it.
Head not turn. Not moving right?
Numbtongue spoke quietly. Bad Arrow garbled an answer, nodded, and showed Numbtongue what he meant. The Hobbs' conclusion was quiet.
Head not turning. Peek out, can't move. Not like that. Not if it was attached to body.
The Red Fang warriors looked at him. Head Scratcher tightened his grip on his axe. Of course, they hadn't expected adventurers to act like that, but what could it be? What was following them? Had it killed the Raskgar? The Red Fang warriors came to a quick conclusion. If it had scared away or done in 30 of the Raskgar, they were no match. Head Scratcher pointed towards Rabbit Eater and uttered a command. Faster. They picked up the pace, down one corridor, around another. They watched their backs. The head popped up every time they rounded a corner. It felt like the head was watching them, and it felt like whatever was following was moving faster each time. A bit faster, creeping up on them. And what could they do if it decided it was time? The Red Fang Goblin searched for a spot to take cover, to use as a choke point. Advantageous terrain. But they were following Vuleel Dre's directions, and as they were all suddenly painfully aware, they could find the treasure room, but getting back would mean taking a new route and getting lost, or going back and confronting whatever was behind them. Shorthilt nudged Rabbit Eater, mimed asking about his danger sense. Numbtongue thought. He made a strangled noise. The Hobbs walked faster. Too soon, the Red Fang Goblins were walking down a long corridor when Numbtongue called a halt. Bad Arrow muttered an oath. The head was peeking. He raised his bow, and the head disappeared. Then, two came back. Raskgar and human. Both leaned out from around the corner as all the Red Fang warriors stared. Both heads practically on top of each other. If they had been alive, the Raskgar would have had to be lying on the human. If they had been alive. But neither face blinked. Bad Arrow drew his arrow to his string and hesitated. The heads were waiting. Just staring.
Here.
Numbtongue's voice didn't quite shake. He pressed a hand to a section of wall and it vanished. He strode down the corridor, a long corridor with an open doorway to the left, a secret passageway with no way out. The Red Fang Goblins hesitated, but there was no other option. They backed into the passageway. It could hold two of them abreast. Better, perhaps. They could hold off an enemy, let Bad Arrow shoot while they held whatever it was off, but on the other hand, it was almost an afterthought to see the treasure room. Almost. Numbtongue stared at the pedestal in the center of the room, through a doorway without a door. Pedestals, in fact. Three of them. One held a bunch of white cloth tied up with golden string. The second, a bell made of bronze and blue metal, half and half. The third, a necklace, a stone darker than obsidian with something carved on it, held on a long chain of glowing silver metal. All three objects made Numbtongue's breath catch in his throat. He didn't enter the room, though. He wasn't an idiot. The room was trapped. Trapped and deadly, according to the masked woman Vuleel Dre had met. And it must have been some trap to keep adventurers from going for the treasure. Rabbit Eater could sense the danger, too. He was grabbing at Numbtongue's arm and shaking his head vehemently. The five goblins all peeked at the treasure as Shorthilt and Head Scratcher stood in front of Bad Arrow, facing the corridor. It was coming. They had to make a plan. Fight, obviously, but grab the items first? The goblins had no idea what the trap was, but they did have a solution. Rabbit Eater pointed towards the objects. He could run in and grab one, throw it out, and then try the others. It was a maneuver that would most likely kill him, but that was what the goblins had agreed they would try. A goblin's life for an artifact. Any goblin would call it a good trade. They had had other plans they could execute, trying to grab the artifacts with a rope, knocking them off the pedestals with an arrow, using a monster or Raskgar to get it. But they had no time, and they didn't know how far the trap extended. The five Hobbs glanced at each other. Rabbit Eater's face was set. It was Bad Arrow, who grunted and shook his head. Don't risk it. He pointed towards the end of the corridor. It was coming. Rabbit Eater hesitated. He raised his hand and tapped his head. The others looked at him. Rabbit Eater made a sound. It was a small scream. His danger sense was telling them. The Hobbs looked at each other. Numbtongue bit the inside of his cheek, drawing blood. He looked around. Narrow corridor. Treasure room. No way out except the way they'd come. That thing was already waiting there. It had heads. It was an uttered oath. Head Scratcher had seen a head poke around. Not the ones from earlier. This one was a drake. Female. Staring. It peered at him. And Bad Arrow loosed an arrow. The head vanished. The arrow broke. So quick. Numbtongue's blood chilled as he readied his axe. There had to be something they could do. He was smart. This was his job. He studied the group. Healing potions, rocks, sling, bags. He saw Head Scratcher arming himself with a vambrace from the enchanted suit of armor. Armor. A scant defense. But there had to be something more. Rabbit Eater had his sling out. He was a better shot with that. Bad Arrow had his bow. Sheets? Shorthilt tossed his bag to the ground, readying himself for a single decisive strike. The head poked around the corner again. A staring human with hair. And then a Raskgar. The balding human. The drake. And a gnoll. 5 heads. 1 for each goblin. They stared blankly. Not smiling. Not frowning either. Just staring with wide, wide eyes, unblinking. The goblins waited. Their pulses rose. Bad Arrow aimed from head to head, but didn't waste the arrow. Numbtongue's mind was empty. Heads. Monster. Rabbit Eater was groaning. His danger sense was telling him what was waiting there. Numbtongue glanced at the treasure room. Salvation was one of the artifacts. But which one? Cloak? Necklace? Bell? He looked at the heads. They pulled back. Now! Numbtongue turned. He threw something into the treasure room with a crash. Shorthilt's gaze shifted over and flicked back. He saw something move around the corner. Darkness. Head Scratcher woke up on the floor. He stared up. He could see the corridor above him. Dark. The ceiling 10 feet overhead. He could hear a shuffling sound, but he couldn't see what it was, and neither could he move. He lay on the ground and realized he was propped up on something. Shorthilt. The other hob was lying at an angle, eyes wide, body slumped against a wall. He was alive. Head Scratcher could feel his pulse thundering wildly, but he couldn't move. None of the hobs could. They lay where they had fallen. Puppets filled with life as something shuffled around the corner into the secret tunnel. It was Bad Arrow who had the best view. He'd fallen into a sitting position. His bow awkwardly propped him up. He saw a head appear around the corner, the bald human's. It stared at him and then moved out more. Bad Arrow saw the neck come out, and then nothing. He stared as the head seemed to disappear past the neck. Then he realized it wasn't attached. It was on a stick. The staring human's face stared at Bad Arrow. It was joined by the Raskgar head and the drake head, and followed by a hand. It was large, brown, not furred, but leathery, a cracked, huge thing with long, thick fingers. And then an arm as large as Bad Arrow's chest. A torso. A body. Something shuffled around the corner holding the heads. 5, 3 in the left hand, 2 in the right. It had 2 thick arms with 6 digits each. The fingers were opposable and gripped long sticks that were jammed into the neck of each head. And the thing that held them? It had no head, no neck, just a rounded upper torso with 2 gaping holes where the eyes should be. The sockets were dark, and Bad Arrow couldn't see if there were actually eyes in them. They were gaping ruins in its face, and its legs. It shuffled closer on stumps of legs. Then Bad Arrow realized it was kneeling. To enter the small tunnel, the thing was kneeling. It was tall, and though it looked thick, if it stood to its full height, it would be long, and Bad Arrow struggled with all his might to move. Move! Raise his bow! Loose an arrow at it! But he couldn't. He was paralyzed, forced to stare. The thing rotated ahead towards him. Bad Arrow saw a blank, staring Drake's face, her eyes wide, unmoving. Was that how it saw? Then he saw the sack. It was bloody, stained. The thing pushed it slowly over with one hand as it intruded into the corridor. It crept closer, shuffling on its knees. The gaping sockets peered at the five goblins. A hand rose. Bad Arrow saw the thing stuff the heads it carried into the bag. It crept closer. The hob struggled. Move a finger. Open his mouth to shout. Something. Anything. He couldn't do a thing. Bad Arrow could see Head Scratcher and Short Hilt lying in front of him. Rabbit Eater and Numbtongue were next to him. Their chests rose and fell, but the hobs were still, and the thing was creeping closer. It reached down, and Bad Arrow saw it touch Head Scratcher's neck. It traced a line down his neck as beads of sweat ran down Head Scratcher's face. Slowly, lovingly. The thing had no talons, just brute stumps. It bent, and Bad Arrow saw into one of the gaping sockets. It went back too far into the thing's head, ruined flesh, and in the depths, something bright and dark. It swiveled to look at him. The thing turned. It lifted Short Hilt up, a hand on the hob's chest and another around his neck. The thing squeezed gently, and Bad Arrow saw the hob's eyes widen. Short Hilt's entire body gave the weakest of twitches, nothing more. The fingers of the hollow-eyed thing began to close. They constricted slowly around Short Hilt's neck, squeezing tighter. Tighter. The hob was trying to move. Bad Arrow could see Head Scratcher's chest rising and falling faster. He tried to move. A voice. The thing turned. It stopped squeezing Short Hilt's neck, dropped the hob. It turned to look past Bad Arrow at Numbtongue. It crept forwards over Head Scratcher's body, past Short Hilt. Bad Arrow heard the hob's bodies creaking as the thing shuffled over them. It brushed him aside and lifted Numbtongue up. The hob made another sound. It was all he could do. Slumped now, Bad Arrow saw the hob staring defiantly into the thing's sockets. It held him, fingers pressing slowly into his neck. Numbtongue's face darkened, his flesh deformed, his eyes bulged and moved. Something happened. Bad Arrow saw the thing pause. It stared past Numbtongue. At what? At something beyond him, in the treasure room. Slowly it dropped Numbtongue. Bad Arrow struggled to move, to see. He saw the thing shuffle past the hob, into the treasure room. It hesitated as it squeezed itself in, and then it passed the threshold. There was a sound like a sigh. Suddenly Bad Arrow sat up. He heard a cry, saw Rabbit Eater leap to his feet. The Red Fang Warrior scrambled up, and Bad Arrow lurched towards the doorway, and froze. The thing was standing at the doorway, two six-fingered hands pressed up against a shining barrier of light. It was trapped in the treasure room, and whatever effect it had had on the goblins had ended when the magic trap activated. Now it was pressed up against the barrier, and it was holding something in one hand. A helmet. A steel helmet. A closed visor. If you looked at it right, you could almost imagine it was a head. Bad Arrow stared at Numbtongue. The hob was gasping, coughing as he backed away from the room. The thing inside, the collector of heads, stared at the Red Fang Warriors. Just stared. And then the trap began to activate. At first, all the hobs could see was a fine mist descending from above. Then they saw the thing's flesh begin to slough off. The acid poured down in a mist, melting the thing. Then fire burned. It engulfed the room, a searing blaze. The thing stood, its flesh smoking, not burning. Its hide was tough. And then there was a hissing sound. Magic arrows blasted every corner of the room, avoiding the pedestals. The thing stood. The wind turned to blades. Water filled the room as the trap continued. It was melting, dying, its body disintegrating, but it just stared at the Red Fang goblins from face to face as if it was memorizing them. The five hobs stood watching the trap continue. Water became acid again, and then fire. The trap continued. It didn't stop, and as the second cycle began, the thing seemed to realize it couldn't outwait the trap. It drew back a fist and struck the barrier. The hobs heard a dull thump. The magic shimmered brighter, but didn't change. The thing drew back both hands and struck again. Thump. The barrier held. The thing hit. Thump. Bat Arrow backed up from the doorway. The other hobs drew their weapons as the thing struck again. Thump. Thump. It was melting. The brown leather had flaked off, revealing something red and yellow underneath. Some kind of skeleton? Something else? It was a mess of blood and melted flesh. It struck the barrier. The blow was heavy. Thump. Bat Arrow thought he saw something shift around the doorframe. Thump. The thing's hands were melting. It didn't have the fingers. Bat Arrow thought it would quit. Then its torso drew back. It slammed against the magical barrier. Thump! The stones shook. A puff of powdered masonry dislodged itself. The hobs backed up against the far wall nervously. The trap was killing it, but the thing was still alive. Fire consumed its body. Thump! Arrows of light tore pieces of it away. Thump! Water drowned it. It didn't breathe. Thump! It was staring at them. The barrier was fading. The acid had melted it. Its head was deformed. It was exposed, its brown leather exterior revealing a yellow and bloody red mess. The eyes. Thump! 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 The Red Fang warriors backed up. Thump! The thing was staring at them. The magic faded. The thing pulled back its melting head. Part of it sloughed off. It slammed its head. Thump, thump, thump. This time it was Numbtongue who woke up first. He saw the empty room, felt a burning pain on his legs, and shouted. The other hobs were up in seconds. They stared around wildly. The thing was gone. The magic barrier in the trap room had broken, as had the walls. They were partially torn open, stone bricks lying on the ground. The room was still filled with dissolved flesh, part of the thing. But it had gone, and it had left behind the sack of heads. The hobs stared around. Bat Arrow ran out into the main corridor with Shorthilt. The thing had left a trail of flesh and acid. It stopped after 20 feet. The hobs looked at each other. Head Scratcher opened the bloody bag. He stared into it and silently showed what was inside to Rabbit Eater. The two hobs stared into the bag and closed it. They refused to let the other three Red Fang warriors see what was inside. They left the bag where it was and refused to go near it. The trap room was still filled with traces of acid. Numbtongue had gotten some on his legs and stomach from where the thing had crawled over him to get away. The healing potion neutralized it, as did scrubbing fiercely at the spots with Aaron's bedsheet. Numbtongue looked into the trap room and took a deep breath. The three objects were still standing on the pedestals. He stepped into the room and waited. Nothing happened. The magic had been broken. Slowly, Numbtongue reached for the bundle of cloth. He didn't touch it, but rather poked it into one of the hemp bags using the handle of his axe. He did the same for the necklace and bell, storing them in separate bags, making sure, very sure, that the bell didn't ring. Then the goblins looked at each other. They'd done it. They'd found the treasure. But they didn't feel relieved. They had no idea whether that thing with the heads was dying or dead. They stared at the sack lying on the floor. Then they turned and ran. They didn't run far. That was a way to die. But the goblins did march quickly back down the corridors. They stared in every direction, and Bad Arrow kept looking behind him, waiting to see a head peeking out from a corner. He never did, but that didn't stop him from thinking he did. The other Red Fang warriors moved in silence, shaken. What they'd seen, what that thing was, it was like something from the high passes. One of the dark things, far worse than Krellers. Why had it collected heads? Were there more of it? Why? It was easy to trace their steps back. But in their haste, the Red Fang goblins nearly walked into the pile of dead Raskgar. Only Rabbit Eater's strangled exclamation warned them before they walked into the silent forms. The Raskgar lay where they had been killed, headless, nearly 30 of them. The Red Fang warriors avoided the corpses and hurried back. Bad Arrow kept looking over his shoulder. It wasn't dead. It wasn't dead, and it had looked at them, at him, memorizing his face. Was it hiding? Why hadn't it tried to kill them? Maybe it was too injured to keep them paralyzed for long. Maybe 2 corridors away from the exit to the dungeon, Bad Arrow saw it. A face. It peeked out of the corridor. He screamed, raised his bow, and loosed an arrow. In his fear, his shot was wide. The arrow flew past the face, and Bad Arrow heard an exclamation. The head twisted, and he realized it wasn't a disembodied head. It was a goblin. A goblin? The small, pallid thing had far paler skin than the Red Fang goblins, and it was small, malnourished. But it was clearly a goblin. The Red Fang warriors stared. The small goblin stared at them. It had a sling in its hands. It whirled it and threw. The stone shot past Head Scratcher. He stared. Then they heard a howl. Behind the goblin, a dark shape bounded forwards. A Raskgar, followed by more of its kin and smaller cave goblins. They were armed, and the cave goblins rushed forwards with uncertain shouts, staring wide-eyed at the Hobbs. For a second, the Red Fang warriors were stunned. Then their reflexes kicked in. They turned and ran as the Raskgar hunting party pursued them. There were dozens of Raskgar and countless more cave goblins. They flooded the corridors, scaring the other monsters away. The Red Fang warriors ran, tracing their route back. Death came flooding down every corridor, but it was almost a relief. They spotted the rift and ran towards the walls leading up, but there were no ropes. They would have to climb. Bad Arrow spun and raised his bow. He loosed an arrow and dropped the Raskgar in front. Head Scratcher boosted Shorthild up and turned. He punched a goblin so hard it dropped, raised his axe, and then changed his mind and kicked another goblin. They backed away as Head Scratcher and Bad Arrow lashed out with fists, pummeling the small goblins rather than slaughtering them. Arrows were flying through the air. Numbtongue cried out in pain as one pierced his shoulder, but he kept climbing. Head Scratcher swore and pulled something from his belt. Another smoke bag? No, they'd stolen. The vial broke, and Bad Arrow gagged as Octavia's stink potion exploded in his nostrils. He nearly vomited there and then and saw the cave goblins staggering back, gagging. They were able to move, though, and one took a slice out of his calf with a dagger. Bad Arrow clubbed the goblin with his bow. The effect on the Raskgar was 10 times stronger, though. The Hobbs heard a howl as the Knoll's distant cousins writhed in agony, covering their noses, vomiting, or simply running to get out of range of the deathly odor. The Hobbs took that opportunity. Bad Arrow and Head Scratcher leapt for the walls, kicking goblins swarming after them. Numbtongue and Rabbit Eater were already at the water's edge. They raised their arms and pulled themselves up into the water. Shorthilt followed, and Head Scratcher climbed after him. Bad Arrow was about to enter the water when he felt a thud in his back. An arrow from one of the Raskgar. He twisted, and another struck him in the shoulder. Head Scratcher looked down at his friend and shouted. Bad Arrow grunted. He didn't feel... His grip slipped. He nearly fell, but Headscratcher grabbed him. The hob hauled him up and somehow pulled Bad Arrow into the water as the cave goblins tried to pull him down. Headscratcher roared and then took a breath. Weakly, Bad Arrow did the same. Their heads plunged into the water overhead, and then they were swimming. Or rather, Headscratcher was. One hand stroked, and he kicked with both legs as he carried Bad Arrow with his other arm. Bad Arrow tried to paddle as well, but he felt tired. Poison? Right, the arrows had been... It was a long way to the surface. Nearly 100 feet overhead, the light was shining dimly, obscured by moving shapes. Fish. Headscratcher strained, pulling his body and Bad Arrow's up with every laborious kick. He struggled towards the light, but it was so far, and there was blood in the water. Fish were attracted to Bad Arrow's wounds. They swam around the two hobs, some biting, others curious. Headscratcher tried to ward them away as he swam, but he was out of breath. He could swim 100 feet up if he'd been by himself and hadn't been exhausted. But two people? A hand on his arm, the one that was gripping Bad Arrow. Headscratcher felt Bad Arrow trying to make him let go. One of them could make it, but Headscratcher refused to loosen his grip. Never, never again. He'd rather die than blackness. Again, creeping at the thoughts, darkness. Headscratcher felt weary. It wasn't fair. They'd done it. They'd come away with the treasure, but two wouldn't make it. At least Numbtongue had the artifacts. At least. So this was it. Headscratcher struggled, but the sky was far, far away. It was a good trade in the end. They'd done it. Survived a dungeon. Sacrificed. Taken treasure adventurers couldn't get. That was worth it. That was a good goblin death. That was good, wasn't it? He wished he could see Aaron again, one more time. Say something, anything. He could almost see her face, smiling, asking him if he was really okay. It was funny. Headscratcher thought he was having a vision of her in the water. It looked like she was right there, swimming towards him. Aaron reached down and grabbed Headscratcher. He stared at her, the blackness consuming him. Aaron pulled something off her finger and clumsily fumbled it onto his. Headscratcher stared, and then he inhaled, and he felt oxygen flood into his lungs. Pure, clear air. Only it wasn't air, it was water. But he could breathe it. He stared at the ring on his finger as he gasped and then grabbed Bad Arrow. The hob's eyes were closed, but as Headscratcher shoved the ring onto his pinky finger, the hob's eyes widened suddenly. He gasped, and Headscratcher realized his lungs were full of water. He began to choke and saw Aaron doing the same thing. Then he felt something yank him up. Headscratcher, Aaron, and Bad Arrow were pulled up through the water faster than any of them could swim. They passed by a swimming Pisces, making the water boil around a fish. Jellicoe grappling with one of the giant black octopus fish. Seaborn nimbly stabbing a swimming Raskgar as he breathed the water like air. And a sinking Dawil, flailing with hammer in hand. And then they broke out of the water and hung, vomiting water and gasping in fresh, cool air. The rain stung Headscratcher's face. It was pouring. He turned and saw who had carried them out of the water. Feline, Typhonius, and Moore standing on a hilltop. They pointed, and Aaron and the two hobs floated towards them. By their side, Saria was shooting ice spikes into the water, and Revy's summoned warriors were shooting arrows with Halrock at the fish hounding the other Red Fang warriors and adventurers in the water.
Oh, there they are!
Quick, get them out of the water! Tommy, someone get Dawil!
Where is Yalos? He's got a Raskgar! Pull him up!
The mages were shouting as the other adventurers surfaced and pulled themselves into boats manned by scared-looking drakes and gnolls. The waters were churning with motion. The two Hobbs and Aaron were unceremoniously dropped to the ground. Head Scratcher landed and scrabbled for a healing potion for Bad Arrow. He poured it over his friend, slapping Bad Arrow's face urgently until the Hob punched him back. Then Head Scratcher just lay back.
Hey!
A voice made Head Scratcher sit up weakly. He saw Aaron, still breathing hard, panting, and looking at him as the other adventurers struggled out of the water. She pointed to the ring on Bad Arrow's finger.
Give that back to Kissimber later, will you? That's his. He lent it to me.
Head Scratcher stared at her, and then fumbled with the ring. Aaron shook her head.
Later! You okay?
Slowly, Head Scratcher nodded. Aaron gazed at him, then she punched him weakly.
Don't do that! Don't...
Oh. She trailed off weakly. Head Scratcher hung his head. He hadn't thought anyone would notice they'd gone. But somehow Aaron had, and she'd known exactly where they were.
You did it! You actually did!
Aaron's voice roused him. Head Scratcher looked up and saw that she was staring at Numbtongue. The Hob looked drowned like the others, but he was holding the three bags filled with the artifacts tightly to his chest. The other adventurers were staring at him incredulously. Aaron breathed out.
Adventurers! I said you were! And Celis didn't believe me.
Head Scratcher blinked. He pointed to himself questioningly, then at Bad Arrow. Aaron nodded.
That's what you should be. That's what I tried to get Celis to do. You should be adventurers! Goblin adventurers!
Adventurers? Head Scratcher couldn't believe his ears. Like Garen Redfang? Like them? He looked at his friends, his companions. Bad Arrow sitting up groggily, Rabbit Eater still coughing up water, Shorthilt the most unscathed but hopping mad because he dropped his sword while swimming, and Numbtongue, the one who'd saved them with a clever trick. All they'd done was go into a dungeon and loot it. Stole from it, really. Goblins were good at stealing things, but wasn't that what adventurers did, when you really thought about it? Adventurers. He had to admit, it had a nice ring to it, but it was too much to take in. Head Scratcher lay on the grass. He stared up at the sky as rain hit him on the face. It was still raining. He was exhausted, hurt, and still frightened of what he had seen. But he was alive. The Hob lay there and began to laugh. After a while, Aaron started laughing too. They were alive.